This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. It is officially the 15th of October, and Lawrence, you were saying, what, 7 weeks to Christmas?
Yeah, still right around the corner.
I can't believe it, eh? The retailers are into the swing of things, and we think some of them have jumped the gun, as have some advertisers out there. But let's get straight into it. The full studio today. George, how are you doing?
Hey, good, and you, Ty?
Lekker, man. Martin, how's it going?
All right, and you, Ty?
As I said, Lawrence is in the studio. Hi, Lawrence.
Hey!
And Fazana, how are you, Fuzz?
Hey, Ty, good to fix you.
Lekker, man. Why do they turn the name Fazana into the word fuzz?
Like... The other day I was counting, I probably have 12 different variations of my name. People call me all sorts of things. Yeah.
Fuzz. Fuzz. We used to call the cops Fuzz.
Yeah, exactly. It's a brand police. Anyway, cool. Well, guys, let's get straight into it. Lots happening, and I see that the best global car brands have officially been revealed. And essentially what this is a study of the biggest and the best brands globally. So basically, if we run through the list, I mean, do you guys want to hazard a guess as to who you think might be on top of this list from a brand point of view, without reading the notes, obviously?
I haven't read them, and okay. I can tell you now it's Toyota.
Okay. And then, why would you say that?
Because, well, they're the best customer service brand out there. They have probably the best lineup of, the most comprehensive lineup of products. I'd peg VW a second.
Yeah.
Oh, am I right?
No, you're not. You're not right.
Well, close. So I was one out of two is not bad.
No, one out of two is not bad. Anyway, let's just run through this list check quickly. But basically, a report has been conducted by a company called Interbrand. You do the study every single year, and the best global brands in the automotive sector are Toyota. Followed by Toyota, whose brand is valued at $53 billion.
Frickin' hell.
That's a lot of cash money. Exactly. Followed by Mercedes-Benz in second position, who is valued at $48 billion. BMW in third place with $41 billion. Honda, $23 billion. Ford, only $13 billion. I thought Ford would have been a little bit bigger. Honda, $13 billion. Nissan, $12 billion. Volkswagen, $12 billion. And they're only in eighth. And then followed by Audi.
Hyundai's ahead of them?
And Porsche. Yeah,
fanboys everywhere.
How's that, eh? Yeah, so I mean, that's quite interesting. And again, you know, the senior director from automotive at Interbrand said, in the midst of unprecedented disruption, automotive brands find themselves evolving from being once-off transaction-focused to enduring relationships-orientated. Today's brands that invest wisely in technology to enhance the customer experience will not only survive, but thrive. And I think to that point, I think car brands have to become more than just, let me sell you a car and I'll sell you what every...
They're not automotive brands anymore, they're consumer brands.
They are consumer brands.
You want them coming back to buy your product again.
Yeah.
Nowadays, cars are becoming disposable.
Consumable items.
It's the cell phone of the future.
Yep. Every 2 years, you're getting that guy back in your showroom. And if he had a crappy experience the first time around, you can kiss that guy goodbye.
Yeah. It's funny enough, we attended a research workshop last week where we sat with centennials, who essentially are young adults between the ages of 18 and 24. And they had a panel of these students who are all in their thirds and third years, and they're doing postgrad studies. And out of the six young adults that they had in the panel discussion, only one of them owned a motor vehicle.
No, it's not surprising. Yeah, absolutely not surprising. Yeah,
the question to these guys was, you know, how important is a vehicle in your day-to-day life? And these guys are saying that, you know, back in the day when you turned 18, it was like, okay, cool, man, I can get a car.
I think their cell phones are more important to them than
that. Oh, absolutely. 100%. Yeah. I can tell you now, they all sat up there with their phones pretty much in their hands. You know,
that it's funny that you can use a cell phone to call a car now.
Well, this is where it's going.
Well, there's that.
It's getting complicated.
There's that, and also the fact that I think young people today communicate and interact more via the internet than they do in person.
Absolutely.
I mean, it
I hate it.
So do I.
Maybe it's because I'm in my 40s, but texting is my is my
is your pit.
It's my nemesis. I hate it.
I hate it when somebody writes you a Ben Hur.
Yes.
All right. And you get this freaking
Ben Hur.
Long War and Peace.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, and you want to reply like, yeah, okay, cool, I agree.
Yeah,
you know, but agreed. You kind of feel guilty because you haven't written
a single letter response.
Absolutely. K. And a shop and a thumbs up. Just give me emoticons. Like I can communicate with pictures.
No, pick up the phone and dial my number, damn it.
Absolutely. Easier to have a phone call. But you're right, George. And if you think about the youngsters that are coming through now, if you look at your kids and I look at my kids, you look at your kids, Lawrence, Martin, I know you don't have, and Fuzz, not yet. But
don't know if my kid is going to even know how to drive. I don't think she is.
Well, you know, this is something we'll chat on a little bit later, because Lawrence and I were chatting before we got onto air. But if you think about it, kids nowadays have been born into a connected universe.
Yeah.
Mm. 2-year-olds know how to open phones and play on apps. I have a nephew who can do this. What their universe compared to our universe when we were that age is completely different. And I think what's going to happen is, and you'll see this natural progression into cars and stuff like that. So it really is. It's completely different.
It's socializing without the icky human component.
Yeah, exactly. I prefer the icky human component. The icky human components. But anyway, yeah. So these brands are obviously doing a great job. I think the question that I wanted to ask is, do you think we're seeing this in our dealer networks across the country? Are there brands that are embracing this, and brands that are? It's not just about the sale of the vehicle, because the long term benefits of having a relationship with a customer, obviously,
the international requirements by these OEMs naturally filter into a country like ours. You can't not have that situation, or the value of whatever these brands are.
Yeah.
Filter or translate into an experience in the country, because I mean, you know, Mercedes-Benz have some very sticky rules around how their brand is portrayed in the market, which is a good thing, and that's why they're second on the list.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, that's all pretty cool. And then I jumped onto the Interbrand website and I saw that they've been involved with rolling out a new dealership model with Nissan, and they've kind of rejigged the dealer model to make it more customer focused, and this is something that they're going to be rolling out over the next couple of years. We'll probably kick off early 2019 overseas, and then they'll obviously bring those kind of dealerships to South Africa. I think something that I ponder quite a bit is there a need for brick and mortar? I mean, we've had this conversation. Do you think in 10 years' time you're going to have dealerships, or do you think buying and selling of vehicles will happen online and OEMs will have warehouses with cars where you don't actually have to go to a dealership, or do you think we'll always need a dealership? Just a train of thought.
The touch and feel of everything is still a very big component of a sale.
Yeah.
So People still want to touch.
Ask yourself why Apple stores exist.
Yeah, I suppose you're right, because you want to go and test and play.
It's sexy, it's pretty, it's nice to be there, it's laid out nicely, it's,
it's inviting.
It's when you can't afford that latest Apple iPhone 10 that you want to go and touch and feel it, because you're going to buy it at some point down the line. So I think there'll always be a place for a for the consumer to touch and feel a car.
Yeah.
I think it'll move into retail environments, so out of the corner dealership, where the stock sits in a warehouse, like you say, but there's examples of what you can touch and feel in the retail space.
So kind of like window shops in shopping centres.
Yes, I agree with the fact that there needs to be that tactile kind of touch and feel experience. Yeah. We are still human beings at the end of the day, and you can put whatever 3D goggles you want on, you can't feel that object.
No, absolutely. It does make it a little bit different.
Unless they come up with tech that can.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure. Well, you'll see now in some of the stuff that we're going to chat about. I think it's slowly heading in that direction. Guys, I don't know if you saw last week, but there was a video that was doing its rounds. There was a gentleman on a motorbike who happened to catch a taxi driving up.
Good on him.
The wrong way, right?
So just down the road here in Bronson.
Yeah, exactly. It was on William Nicol Drive, right?
Sloane Street.
Yeah. Well, no, just off of Sloane, but he was on Nicol. He had come off of Sloane onto William Nicol, because there's an island that runs you know, that separates, you know, the traffic going in opposite directions. And this taxi took it upon himself to drive into the oncoming traffic because there's obviously
as they do
less traffic over there. And this guy on the motorbike stopped in front of this taxi and just said to him, "You are putting everybody else's lives at risk, and you are not going any further." And he literally parked his bike in front of this taxi driver.
Took
and
a massive risk.
He did take a massive risk.
You just don't know what was going to happen in that scenario. He was lucky. But yeah, no, it's wrong. Drive up the wrong side of the road. Well, like who do you think you are?
Exactly. So anyway, what's nice to know is, and I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but this so-called taxi driver was arrested. So through the assistance of an active citizen. So this is Joburg Public Safety. Through the assistance of an active citizen of City of Joburg, ZA, a taxi driver was captured on camera driving facing oncoming traffic in Bronston and has been arrested by the JMPD, which is fantastic.
Charge reckless driving.
Reckless and negligent driving, okay. Which is fantastic, and that just goes to show you that guy obviously had a GoPro or Martin can attack the mic there. Do you think we're going to start seeing a lot more of this? I mean, you know,
It's the second incident, or should I say, example of this in I think 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah,
there was 1 2 or 3 weeks ago as well. Of the guy that drove into that smash and grab dude.
Oh yes.
So it's the second incident of people kind of saying I've had enough.
You know? Citizens are starting to fight back. Yeah. You know, and it doesn't have to be violent or anything.
What I would like to see is the JMPD doing exactly that.
Absolutely.
Citizens go with video evidence footage.
Yes.
There it is. You caught the guy red-handed. I'm doing your job for you. Now all you have to do is track him down, arrest him, revoke his license, and crash the taxi, whatever.
Well, this is what I was going to say. I mean, I don't know if anyone's kind of... I don't know if the JMPD have got an email address or a place where you can send these types of videos. But, I mean, dash cam footage, I mean, that is... You don't get any more proof. Do you need anything, you know, else? And I think it's fantastic. I really do. Yeah. So hats off to this guy.
It's actually way overdue. They should actually set up an interface type program or...
We all know the cops are completely outnumbered.
Yeah. So they are outnumbered.
So if the public can provide them with the evidence, they could prosecute.
Yeah, which might...
For actual crimes, not going five over the speed limit.
Yeah, well, I think it's nice to know that you could be driving in your car, and if you're driving recklessly, someone behind you with a dash cam is able to film what you're doing and send it off. And you might find that might actually cause a knock-on effect, and people might actually start driving properly, which is really, really good. So hats off to that guy. Did that bike just park itself? BMW tests its incredible self-riding motorcycle. Now, I was amazed to see this thing. BMW have gone and they've... BMW Motorrad have revealed a self-driving motorbike that can ride and park itself without the need of a rider. The self-driving version of the 1200 GS bike is powered by intelligent software that enables it to start on its own, speed up, and come to a complete stop. The motorcycle can be started remotely, accelerates, and handles corners on a racetrack before bringing itself to a stop. And BMW claims that the bike was not built for consumers, but instead to provide support for inattentive drivers and more stability in emergency situations.
Okay, so this technology technically existed a long time ago. In what?
Probably, I don't know. Does this come from a
what do you call those little motorbikes that race around a track?
Radio controlled motorbikes.
But didn't those have like training wheels?
That one had training wheels as well. Have a look at the video footage.
Yeah, but that was in testing. I mean, the video that you see now, they've taken the training wheels off because they've obviously got the bike to work without,
Without the centrifugal force, that bike's not going to stand up. You can do what you like.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever technology you want, unless you've got some sort of anti-gravitational...
Flywheel or... simple flywheel setup. Gyroscope will actually keep it upright.
Yes, but you've got to get that thing spinning first.
Yeah.
So you know, maybe they can, but you know, the thing's got to be riding to stand.
Yeah, it has to be riding to stand up. So Lawrence and I were chatting just now, and we were going, you know, is this a good or a bad thing? I mean, is this enabling drivers or is this actually a hindrance? Because you know, if you look at when we did our driver's license, Lauren asked me, I didn't know what ABS were. I don't think, you know, The cars that we had didn't exist. Yeah. What else?
You didn't have TCS, you didn't have ABS, you didn't have airbags, you didn't have anything, and you're still alive today.
And the electric windows.
You learned how to drive a car because it was a car.
Yes.
We learned techniques that helped us control the vehicle in various circumstances without the need for ABS and TCS and all that other stuff. Nowadays, there are vehicles that are equipped with all of these nanny systems.
Mm. Nanny systems.
I call them nanny systems.
Nanny, the nanny as in helping.
As in help, yeah.
They are there to control the car in the background.
Yeah.
It gives you the illusion of control.
Yes.
Now, my question is, you take a youngster who has just got his driver's license, did his drivers in a car that has ABS and TCS and all that stuff.
Mm.
Take all the systems away and ask him to...
Oh, I've seen the effects of that firsthand.
Yeah, but he doesn't need to,
does he? It's not pretty.
Now,
he doesn't need to.
My question is now with this bike.
Mm.
It has all of these systems in it.
Mm.
I learned how to ride a motorcycle a specific way.
Yeah.
And you use throttle input, clutch control, trail braking, that type of stuff to lean the motorcycle over, lift it back up again. What happens if that system decides...
You're leaning too much.
And, yeah, you're going over the handlebars.
Yeah, so you're going around a left bend, and you're quite a good rider, and let's say you want to drag your knee... And the bike goes, hang on a sec, yeah, we're over this angle. And
this
it wants
is not
to
allowed.
Yeah,
and it exactly. will lift you back up.
And it will lift you back up, and you're still hanging on left. I mean, is that going to cause an accident? I mean, I'm all for technology and any safety system that can help. And but I think, to your point...
I think this will enable, if this were to reach production, it would enable people who shouldn't really be on bikes to be on bikes.
That was the point I made.
But if you shouldn't be on a bike, then you shouldn't be on a bike.
Yeah, much like many of our new generation drivers who really shouldn't be behind the wheel.
And it's like the semi-autonomous driving that you get in
exactly.
Hertz and Beamers. And guys are actually getting in the car and thinking, okay, well, this thing's going to drive me home.
Mm.
What is stopping a guy from having one too many brown bottles at the bar, climbing on his bike and saying, well, the bike's going to take me home.
Yeah.
I don't have to drive it. It's going to drive itself.
Yeah. Well, look, with a BMW bike, it won't be a brown bottle.
Just put whatever.
You know what I'm saying.
Anyway, so that's, I mean, you know, again, I think, you know, technology is obviously finding its way in. But listen, these guys, I mean, they haven't stuffed around. I mean, they've done the R&D over 2 years to get this bike to a point where it doesn't need a driver or
it's
training.
It's going there. And, you know, like, so what if we can't drive a car in the future? It's, you know, do you know how to ride a horse?
Nope.
Yes. Exactly.
Not properly.
100 years ago, actually, if you didn't know how to ride a horse, you'd be looked at funny.
You're making a very good point here, George, and I think the application of something like this, we are moving into a future where people will get into...
He's going to say it. He's going to say it.
You need to swallow those words.
Yeah, I just choked. I was just thinking about it. But we'll be getting into autonomous pods.
Yeah.
And with this kind of technology, your autonomous pod won't need four wheels.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I think, you know, I think it's just, it's, we battle as human beings to put ourselves in the future and in, you know, because, I mean, we come from the 1980s, let's be honest.
Mm.
We come from the 1980s, and that's our reference point. That's our point of departure.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to put yourself into, you know, 2020 with somebody that's anchored in 1980.
True. Very true.
So, yes, like you said, I'm all for technology and the advancement of things that are going to save people's lives and make things easier and better. I'm still old school. I don't quite want to let go of the fact that there is a little button there that I can push that switches the system
off. Yeah. Anyway, we'll see what happens. Right, some news out of Silverton. The Silverton assembly plant in Pretoria is obviously owned by Ford. And the first batch of trial units of the Ranger Raptor have emerged from Ford Silverton assembly plant in Pretoria.
And boots everywhere rejoice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I heard a rumbling
in the East Rand.
Yes.
Did it go mad? There was loud clapping and shouting, which is fantastic.
In Pretoria as well.
As the first Ranger model to be introduced as part of the Ford Performance family, this high-speed off-road bucky will set an entirely new benchmark for its segment, says the automaker, when it is launched in South Africa during the first half of 2019. They've produced 10 trial units to date, and in preparation for the full-scale production of the all-new model, the Silverton Assembly Plant produced its first 10 official Ranger Raptors as part of its kind of tooling trials. So these are obviously go, you know, this is probably all part of that R&D, right, George? Mm-hmm. Where they, you know, test tooling, make sure everything's okay. I mean, they speak about, you know, the machines turning and holding the chassis and everything that goes into it. Now, we spoke a while ago about that 3 billion rand
investment, the
investment.
Upgrade.
Yeah, the upgrade to the plant, and this is obviously for this. And I jumped onto the site. This Raptor looks like it's going to be an amazing bucky. It even has a budger mode.
The thing is, though, Ford has always had their styling right.
Yes.
They look beefy. They're it's a real testosterone mobile.
Yes, yeah.
And that's the appeal. People love the Rangers for the way they look. Martin will agree with you in some of the Ranger Raptor or some of the Ranger models that have come out have been less than desirable driving.
Okay. Yeah.
But they're styling.
That doesn't matter because they
look good.
Good.
Yeah. I mean, what is your take? What do you guys think is the petrol heads on the show? Yeah. What is your take on this? You know, is there a need for a Ford performance?
I think they took a very interesting angle with this Ranger Raptor. Instead of going for all-out performance, they went for off-road performance.
Yes.
How relevant that will be to the local boots who buy these, it's
well,
a
it
bit
depends
of an open
on,
question.
You know, whether it's going to be driven on tar most of its life or
yeah.
not.
Well, you've got the V6 Amarok.
Yeah, that's you've the problem.
Got,
you've got the Merc X, whatever.
The X350D, which is coming January next
yeah.
year.
Okay.
So there is a very small, tiny little segment at the tip of the spear where it comes to double cabs. Mm-hmm. They are performance double cabs.
And not yeah. only that, from Ford's own stable, from Ford Performance's own stable, there's
the Roush.
Yeah.
So there is a very small segment of the market that is interested in these vehicles. Mm. And it's Mercedes-Benz has actually come out on record and said they can forget about there ever being an AMG version.
Okay.
Which pretty much says to me that it will be one
yep.
at some point. Whenever an automaker denies something.
Also, there's big money to be made doing that, so they will.
So, yes, in our market, locally, not that many, but globally.
But look, I mean, I think a lot of these are obviously going to be exported.
Yes.
You know that that's the primary reason why they've been manufactured.
And my guess is, with a price tag close to a bar,
yeah,
not many guys are going to be able to afford them.
Yeah.
Afford them.
At that price level, the market is small.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, at least they come with wider fenders. So, I mean, the Boerewors Cordain boys and
the Raptor
Benoni
really
boys,
has wide well, fenders.
Wider.
Wider. The wider comes with wider fenders, you see.
I like it, eh? What is your do you like it, George?
I like it. I think it's cool for its application. You know, off road, as you say, it's kind of a little bit of a rugged vehicle. Maybe the farmers will look more trendy.
Well, the farmers, and I think, you know, if you look at the state of some of our roads, maybe we'll all need Raptors.
Or the look at a 2-litre biturbo engine with a 10-speed auto.
Oh, let's
and
go to
say
Martin's house and go and fetch that Landy.
There's yeah. a lot to go wrong here.
You think so, Mark? Do you think we're going to have issues? I mean,
it's obviously a very sophisticated vehicle.
Yeah.
Given its mission in life, and as such, that sophistication might cut against it in the long run. As far as, you know, actual working applications go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll wait and see. I'm excited about it. I think it looks the part. In my universe,
I'm really interested to see how this Raptor will be accepted in the marketplace.
Do you think will this be in competition with the Hilux Dakar that was built? Is that a performance, or is that just a styling package? Yeah.
Now we're talking about a double cab with a big engine in it.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, this one.
No, this one's a 2-liter, twin turbo.
Yeah, it's not a big stonking V8, but it's the power figures that you got to look at.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll wait and see what happens. And on that note, let's get into our Formula One update. Obviously, there wasn't a Grand Prix this weekend, but last weekend there was the Japanese Grand Prix. George, do you want to let us know what went down there?
You know, I think it's now going to be a bit of a procession, to be honest. You know, the fact of the matter is, and this is happening all the time, Ferrari are just not acting like a team.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. They're fast enough, Vettel's got the skill, but they're just strategically not making the right decisions. And stupid mistakes. Hats off to Hamilton. I'm not a supporter of Hamilton.
I'm a supporter
of Ferrari and Vettel. Yeah. But hats off to Hamilton. You know, he's got his head in the game. He's focused. Doesn't matter where he is. He's like a Jedi.
Yeah. But you think he's, I mean, what you're saying now, it sounds like he's obviously got the backing of his team. They're all into making sure that
he... I don't know if it's the backing of the team. It's more, I mean, Vettel's got the backing of his team. It's more how the team actually cohesively works together and makes decisions. You know, it just seems like for me, Ferrari is making the wrong calls. I mean, to come out during qualifying on wet tires when everyone else is coming out on dry tires, yes, the clouds are looming, but
the track's still dry.
The track's still dry. You're taking a serious gamble versus everyone else. Surely you know that.
Are you allowed to change your tires then on your second or third lap?
Yes,
in the qualifying.
Yeah, in the qualifying, you can change your tires to whatever you want.
Within that 10 minutes.
Yes, you've got to do it within that 10 minutes. But, I mean, Q2 usually dictates what tire you start the race on. Whatever your fastest time is in Q2 dictates what you start the race on. So everyone else goes out on dry tires, and you can see it. I mean, all you need to do is send somebody to stand in the pit lane, and then you can see what Mercedes has got on their on their car. Don't send your boy out with wet tires when 90% of the rest of the field are going out on dry. You know, and then you get caught out because the track's dry. Then it starts drizzling. Everyone else comes in. You come in. You put dry tires on. They put wet tires on, and you bugger the other way around.
Oh no, man.
Yeah. So you know, it's just stupid little decisions like that they're making, and Vettel ends up on the back of the in the midfield.
Yeah. Look, from our side, it doesn't seem like Vettel actually lost the championship. It's Ferrari that lost it for him.
Yes. No, I think that's spot on. Vettel did play a part though. In my opinion, he's not dialed in.
No.
You know, it's like he's laser given up. Sharp focus. You know, and at that level, and any level for anybody in any scenario, you have got to, and that's why I said Jedi focused. Mm. You have got to have that sharp focus all the time, because there's, you know, in my opinion, there's three things if you want to get ahead in life. One, you got to work hard. Mm. Two, you got to be smart. Now, most of us are smart enough. Three, you got to work smart. Now, everybody's doing those three things. So, you've got to work harder than everybody else. You've got to try and be smarter than everybody else. How do you do that? You research and you read.
Yeah.
You've got to work smarter than everybody else. If you can outwork everybody at that pace and at that level, which Hamilton is doing, your equipment doesn't make too much of a difference. As long as your equipment is on par with everybody else's, you will win.
Yeah.
Ferrari's not doing that.
Yeah, and I think you say that, and you can relate that to any sport.
Exactly. You can relate that to business. You can relate that to life. You can relate that to Formula One.
Yeah.
At that level where everybody is on the edge, you have got to be like a flipping Jedi.
Absolutely.
There was actually somebody that highlighted something for me the other day. Ferrari started the season really strong. And then Sergio, the guy that owns FCA and Ferrari.
Marchione. Sergio Marchione.
Marchione. He died. And it seems pretty much since that point, Ferrari's wheels are falling off. So I don't know. Maybe there's a connection there.
Maybe there's a connection there. So, you know, it sounds like it might be... It just sounds like Ferrari... I mean, Mercedes-Benz have got a team that are... Everyone's pulling in the same direction.
They're working cohesively.
And Ferrari aren't doing the exact same thing.
I think they've pretty much given up for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think Ferrari's given up.
We'll see what happens in Russia.
But anyway, something else that I thought was... was really, really interesting. An all-new... a new all-female racing series launched on Wednesday last week and supported by former Grand Prix driver David Coulthard and top designer Adrian Newey is aiming to help women racers get to Formula One. So no woman has competed in Formula One since 1976, but organizers of the W Series hope to provide a platform for them to develop skills before taking on the men further up the motorsport ladder. I wanted to just chat about this before. I know if you carry on reading the article, there was a lady once who got half a point for an F1 team, and I think since 1976, ladies haven't been allowed to race for whatever reasons people have. I think this is a good thing. I don't see why, and maybe I don't know enough, but why, if a woman is good enough to drive a F1 car and compete at the highest level, should she be allowed to race? And I just want to get your guys' take on this.
There have been a number of lady racers over the years, Michelle Maton being one mm-hmm. of them. I have maximum respect for them. I don't know if there is an actual rule in Formula One that says women are not allowed to race. I just don't know if they have been given the opportunity to show that they are more than capable of doing that. I think it was just the other day there was a young lady that won the very first NASCAR race. She's the yep. first lady to ever win a NASCAR race. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there are plenty of women out there that have got more than enough talent to outdrive men. They just don't get given the opportunity to. And if there is a feeder series that will give them an opportunity to show off their skills, then that's great. But the teams that are currently competing need to say, all right, well, let's bring a woman.
If you can turn the toms, you get the drive. Yeah. That's how it should be.
It doesn't matter whether
what your gender is. If you,
because I've seen through the years in my various motorsport formulas, VW Challenge and the likes, production cars even, I've seen some lady drivers properly show the guys how it's done.
Yeah.
And then they run out of funds.
Which is crazy.
Because
it really is.
I don't know. It's just, is it the testosterone-driven environment of motorsports that it's a guys only? No.
Nope.
Nobody, no, I don't think anybody said that. You know, it should be open to all, and then you win on the basis of merit. Not on the basis of anything, and you shouldn't be restricted on the basis of anything either. You know, we're way past this. You know, let's move on from race, gender, issues.
Yeah, exactly. If you're good enough.
If you're good enough, you're good enough.
Yeah.
Finished.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, as a matter of fact. You know, I, with all the technology that exists in a Formula One car, you know, it's not like you need extra strength. I mean, look how small some of those Formula One drivers are. They're not big, muscular guys. The technology that exists in the car will allow an average person to be able to train, be fit enough, and pull that car around that track at a couple of G's, whether they're a woman or men or
skill
or
skill.
Skill is skill, and that's just the way it is.
Absolutely.
And the fact that there's a feeder series, I applaud them. You know, because without that, the opportunity wouldn't exist.
So now the only question remains whether this feeder series will actually lead to some female drivers.
Well, I think that's probably why they're doing it. I think they've realized that they need it because they obviously are good, you know, female drivers out there, and they need a stepping stone to get into, you know, the kind of
into
higher levels of the sport. Absolutely.
Which actually leads into the next item on our list.
I know, how amazing. So F1's virtual world champion has never driven a car. So esports, we all know, is great, gaining traction. I mean, if you just, you know, if you watch Supersport, there's like two channels for esports.
Yeah.
But there's no need to ask Formula One's virtual world champion, Brendan Lee, about the transformative power of esports. You only have to look at him. This guy goes on to say, since last year I've lost over 20 kilos in weight, said the 19-year-old, as he's geared up to defend his title in the F1 Esports Pro Series, and that starts in London this week, actually. So last November, the Briton turned up at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix as a podgy kitchen porter who had never driven a car before or even been abroad. He emerged as the finger-wagging online equivalent of Lewis Hamilton. I mean, this is absolutely... It's huge. He actually trains with a Formula One coach in terms of his physique and his fitness levels and everything. And this is to play kind of, you know.
But if you look at some of the simulators that these guys are driving, and I mean, George had a chance to drive what we would call an entry-level simulator at Festival of Motoring.
Well, I mean, I spent a long time in that simulator, and I try to get the winning time, and only two guys beat me. It was a real racing car driver.
Yep.
And guess what?
What?
A gamer.
A gamer. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm.
Those are the two guys who beat me.
Yeah.
And I can guarantee you, you probably broke a sweat in there.
I did. It was hard. Wrestling that car was hard.
Because you do. You immerse yourself in the game, right? Yeah. It's, I mean, I know you're not on the track, but you...
But if you're... That simulator does exactly that. You're wrestling with the steering wheel. You're moving around in the cockpit. It gives you a workout.
Yeah,
and definitely does.
You know, I think the only thing that's really missing there is the G-forces.
Well, I mean, that simulator that we had, what they've done is they had padding on the side of the cockpit.
It simulates G-forces. Yeah. It doesn't actual
G-forces. No, absolutely, yeah.
Yes, if you can learn how to drive in a simulator and drive properly,
yeah.
I mean, there are guys that started out in that simulator, they were running 138,
yeah.
And by the end of the weekend, they had their times down to 118.
Yeah.
You know, it's you can shave with a coach standing next to you, telling you when to brake, when to go. You can get really, really good.
Just takes time.
Yeah, I mean, listen, these guys had, there was obviously a competition that was launched to find all these, you know, esports drivers, and they had over 31,000 entries.
Wow.
Well, we have amongst in our ranks South African motoring journalists. There is a gentleman who also came out of nowhere, mm-hmm. An esports driving champ, went overseas, competed,
yeah,
and now he's a motoring journalist.
Amazing! So the Oaks, you know, F1 champion, but he's never driven a car in his life.
Sounds like a plan.
It's ironic.
Sign me up.
Anyway, let's move on to our topical stuff. So I see the EU countries agreed to stringent new CO2 cuts for cars. Now, we all know what happened with VW and Dieselgate, and there's obviously a lot happening, you know, in Europe at the moment, because this is kind of where these conversations are, you know, are happening. So torn between reducing pollution and preserving industry competitiveness, EU environmental ministries meeting in Luxembourg talked for more than 13 hours until almost midnight to reach a compromise over what the 2030 carbon dioxide limits to impose on Europe's powerful car makers. This is still obviously a heated debate, because they're obviously trying to reduce this, because global warming is seriously a problem, and it's speeding up and it's happening. And there's obviously some brands who, you know, who are on board. There are brands who aren't on board, and I just thought it'd be nice to get your guys' take on, you know, what you think should be happening here.
Well, they're taking the steps in the right direction. Diesels are as dead as disco.
Yeah, but hang on. Diesels are actually the vehicles, internal combustion engine vehicles, that put out the least CO2 of them all.
But yeah. They've been demonized. And
but
now
they've been demonized because of the nitrous oxide emissions.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a catch-22 situation. I think George will be happy with what I'm about to say now. The future is to go at least partly electric.
Absolutely. I said hybrid systems.
The future is fully electric. I mean...
Oh, the immediate future. Yeah, until someone actually builds a proper battery at an affordable price, it's not going to happen.
It's
so
coming. It's coming.
Partly electric,
I mean,
is
they haven't,
at least
they haven't
a
been
good
able
point.
To build an entirely efficient petrol engine either. And that's been 100 years.
yeah. And there we go.
Ding, ding.
So, you know what? The thing about a diesel engine, in my opinion, is that a diesel engine can outlast a petrol engine. I mean, we've seen it. These things do hundreds of thousands of kilometers. And that's why they have such appeal, is because they are just, in a lot of instances, bulletproof. Versus a petrol engine, which you have to chuck away after a couple of, 1,000 kilometers.
Yeah, thing is, in the 80s, when the EU, or when the European Union that stage, started imposing emissions caps, they were not too concerned about nitrous oxide.
Mm.
And that gave rise to the point where diesel vehicles actually outsold petrol vehicles by almost 2-1 sure. in certain countries,
and
like France, for instance.
Yeah, and diesel's cheaper.
Well, not anymore. It was then.
Yeah, but I think the point is that it shows lip service by the consumer of the product. That's why the governments have to do what they have to do. Is because, yes, we all sit here and say, oh, no, we shouldn't have diesel vehicles. But guess what?
It's still the best option at the
moment. You still go and you buy it because it's the best option for you, and you think to yourself, ah, I'm one person, I'll just buy a diesel vehicle, no problem. So a lot of consumers, I think, pay lip service to, and I believe in, saving the planet. I believe in, no CO2 emissions, no nitrous oxide. But then go and look what's in their garage.
Mm.
Exactly.
And a lot of times it'll be saying one thing but driving another, because for some reason us as consumers, we don't seem to put ourselves, unless you're really passionate, I'm not saying that, this is by and large, but a lot of times we don't put ourselves in the real world, we put ourselves in a fantasy. And so the European Union and countries have to impose this stuff in order for it to change. Otherwise, it won't.
So I reckon for them to meet these new targets, we will see a great rise in plug-in hybrid
availability. Exactly, and it's not tiny. I mean, if you listen to this, so curbs on the transport sector, the only industry in which emissions are still rising, aim to help the bloc meet its goal of reducing greenhouse gases by up to 40% below levels of 1990.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we want to go back. I mean, these have to be implemented by 2030, but I mean, we've got to reduce emissions from, like, we've got to go back to levels of 20 years ago. You think about the cars that have been sold between then and now.
Mental arithmetic. If you compare it to a 1990 car to the proposed 2030 car, it will literally emit 1/10 as much greenhouse gas as the old one did.
Sure, but so look, we're going in the right direction. I would love to know what our levels are here.
Nowhere near.
No.
We don't.
Okay. Well, interesting to see, and I'm glad that it is on the cards to have it sorted out. And then this is something that I thought was rather interesting. The Road Accident Fund is facing a financial collapse.
No.
Are they broke?
Really?
Yeah, Auditor General Kimi Makwetu has warned that the crash-strapped Road Accident Fund is facing the risk of financial collapse. Makwetu found that the RAF incurred a net deficit of $26.3 billion as of March, and its liabilities exceed its assets by $206 billion. A material uncertainty exists that may cause significant doubt on the public entity's ability to continue as a going concern. These are pretty much in the poo.
Listen,
if you think about it,
the where the hell is all the money that is going into the fuel price?
Well,
I want to know.
That only counts for about 9 million, in total. So that 19 cents that's levied on
is
our
it 19
fuel.
Cents?
Yeah, I think
it was
19
closer
cent.
To a rand.
No, I think it's 19 cents. Carries on there. Yeah, here we go. The board said an increase of the fuel levy to 19 cents in April would add 9 billion to its coffers in the current financial year. But
where did the money go?
Well, it carries on to say, so here we go. Meanwhile, Makwetu found that the RAF incurred $342 million in irregular expenditure that arose mainly from non-compliance with supply chain processes, right? Irregular expenditure amounting to $337 million was incurred on Project Cieza, which was awarded in 2013-2014 financial year. The RAF disclosed its financial statement that $1.3 million in irregular expenditure was incurred in 2017-2018, while $34 million was in prior years. I must say, like,
so that's getting better.
It is getting better. I mean, the fund paid out 271,000. There were 271,000 claims registered this year, and they paid out 203,000. But it's crazy to think that we've got this road accident fund that's there to help the driver when you are hurt or in an accident. And I mean, these guys are pretty much cash strapped. Mm-hmm. George, it's not a good thing.
That's sad. How do you lose 34 million rand in irregular expenditure? It's hand in hand with the rest of what's going on in our
society.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully it can, we can put a stop to this.
Well, look, I think the reason why they have so much less irregular expenditure this year is because, they're broke.
Well, they are broke.
Listen,
these guys are obviously paying out claims, but if we had safer roads to travel on, they probably wouldn't be in this position.
Well-trained drivers don't take stupid risks.
Yeah, exactly. No one's really, pulling in the same direction here. These guys should be working hand in hand with law enforcement and government to go, right, we need a pocket of money so that if people, because we know that you're going to have fatalities on the road. But we don't need to have as many as we are having. Mm. Because we've spoken about 1,000 times, visible policing, people driving properly, you know, we wouldn't be in this situation. But this just screams of, you know,
maladministration.
Yeah, absolutely. So
anyway,
we'll see what
Move
happens.
Along, nothing new.
See what happens with that. Right, let's get into our vehicle review for the day, and we are chatting Chinese. We are chatting the Haval H9. Is yes. that right?
Yep.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Well, before you go and on a tangent on this car, these guys have done a bloody good job in this country. I am impressed. I'm seeing their cars
everywhere.
I'm seeing their dealerships everywhere. You know, good on them. They're really doing a good branding job of themselves.
Well, listen, I wasn't going to go on a tangent because I remember because they launched their they launched their first vehicle last year at the Festival of Motoring. I think that was their first official kind of public, you know.
Well, okay, the brand's been active as of well now for about two years and a half.
That's right.
Okay, so just to give you a little bit of
give me context.
Reference. Haval is the luxury SUV division of GWM, which is Great Wall Motors. GWM's been in the country for a long time.
Since
2005. So they have an established network of dealers and service centers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So Haval is now piggyback on that.
Okay.
But in doing so, they are now opening up dealerships everywhere.
Yeah.
The H9 was launched on this cross-country expedition that they decided to show people that, yes, we might be from China, but you know what? These vehicles are fully capable of traveling across Africa.
Absolutely.
So I think it was just short of 20 days.
Yeah. Was this now recently?
Yep. Just recently. Martin did the first leg. Fazana did the second leg. I did the third leg. The cars left from Joburg, drove up through the Kruger to Sedwana, and then down along the east coast, but didn't touch tar. We drove off-road. And they had a lineup of all the vehicles. They had the H2, H6, GWM Steed, and the H9 vehicles. Mm-hmm. And we traveled in convoy. I think it was just shy of 5,000 kilometers.
Wow.
Not a single breakdown. So, yes, Martin will take over.
Most importantly, not a single complaint regarding the cars from the journalists. None that I'm aware of.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, absolutely, we're all very impressed. Vehicle. We're all very, very impressed with the vehicles.
Well, I mean, this is the number one, as a brand, this is the number one selling SUV brand in China.
Yes.
Right? So, you know, you know, we've had Chinese cars on our roads for a number of years, and I don't see why. And
that's the problem, is there have been a number of Chinese manufacturers. The local distributors brought in the brands from China, distributed them locally, and then disappeared.
Yeah, no backup, no nothing.
So the car breaks, now what do you do?
Yeah.
You can't get parts.
I think that's what a lot of the consumers are worried about now.
Because
quite a bit of questions and stuff when I was posting a lot about Haval were, you know, people were wondering about the same thing.
And it's... You must now know that there are dealerships springing up everywhere, so there is going to be service backup.
Yep.
And because they have the distribution network from GWM, you're not going to worry about getting parts for the thing. We had, on the final leg, they handed over the keys to the first H9 sold in the Western Cape to a Mr. and Mrs. Orenzer.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mr. Orenzer, he actually has 4 Haval vehicles.
Oh, wow.
And he was in an H6C, and he was going up to the Kruger Park, and... something went wrong with the electronic throttle, something or other. He phoned the dealership in Cape Town where he bought the vehicle. That dealership spoke to the dealership up in Tzaneen, and by Monday afternoon, he was on the road again. They fixed the car across dealership. I don't know how they sorted that out, but
they did.
Which tells you something about where this brand is going.
Also, they have a massive, massive parts warehouse now here in Saturn.
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry that they are... really, really that good.
So probably like a centralized distribution warehouse
that's going to supply the rest of
supply the rest of the
so
country.
So essentially, they say within 2 days of any part being ordered, it will be available at the dealership.
Wow, that's quite a bold statement.
That's a bold statement. I mean, that actually also shows real commitment.
Absolutely.
But then we look at the cars, and we can actually understand why they can make claims like these.
Okay.
Specifically, this road trip was... designed to show off the H9, which is their top of the range vehicle.
Yeah. Just from a comparative point of view, just give me some other models that we're comparing this vehicle to.
It's slightly, slightly larger than a Pajero, and it's slightly larger than a Prado.
Okay. All right.
So it's not a small thing.
Same league.
It's in that same league.
Okay.
Now, the first thing you'll notice is you're essentially getting a Prado for Fortuna pricing.
Sure. It's 599,900 rand.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
That's a lot of SUV. And then you think, okay, well, it's probably going to be stripped out. No, sir. And lane departure warning and blind spot monitors. And
full leather interior.
Adaptive xenon lights.
Ventilated cooling seats.
Yeah.
So what, you, seats, I mean, what I'm hearing here yards. Is yeah. that value for money.
Absolutely.
This car strongly. Is...
But that's always been the thing with Chinese vehicles. They seem to present good value for money at face value. The thing that actually impressed me more than just the spec level and the outright capability of the thing was the underlying technology. I mean, there's a ZF 8-speed automatic underneath.
Those are the gearboxes that are used by Audi, Mercedes-Benz.
No, Jaguar. Not Mike. Jag, BMW, yeah. Audi. But I mean, quite a number of premium manufacturers use these ZF boxes. I believe your Disco actually has one.
Mm. Funny that. The BorgWarner transfer cases,
yes,
and diffs.
Which is brilliant. I mean, there's on the touchscreen display, you can select a menu function where it shows you the torque distribution between front and rear wheels. I don't know
and
if you saw
works.
That.
Yes.
Instantaneously, you drive on sand, and within a split second, it says, hang on, there's something going on here, and it sends 80% to the front wheels.
Yeah.
It's pretty much unstoppable, this thing. The only thing we didn't do, I don't know about you, Lawrence, but the only thing we didn't do was hardcore rock climbing.
We got a little bit of
how many people do that? And then you can go and buy a Jeep. Willy's Jeep or something.
But under all conditions, this thing felt at least as well resolved and possibly even more so than the Prado did.
Wow.
Sure. On the road.
So it has a 2-liter...
2-liter turbo petrol.
With no option for diesel, which goes back to what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
The Chinese have said, we are not producing diesels. A rep from Haval that I was talking to in the car with us had said Haval has already had electric vehicles and PHEVs on the China Motor Show since 2008.
Yeah.
So we're only going to get the petrol engine here with the view for electric in future.
Yeah.
And in all honesty, the fuel economy for a car that weighs close to 3 tons.
2.34 curb weight.
We averaged... Sure. Off-road, in the sand, 13-point-something-odd litres per 100 kilometres.
Yeah.
As soon as we hit the gravel,
drop
down to 8.9.
Jeez, look. Because that's, I mean, you're moving a lot of metal like there. Yes. That is phenomenal.
For a big heavy thing like
and
that.
And then, you know, with the convoy driving, you're speeding up, slowing down, slowing down.
Yes.
As soon as we got back into that concertina, it went up to 9.
Okay.
But
you can't expect
anything
else. So,
I mean, we're talking about maybe between 9 and 11 here, town
that
driving.
That car, in its size, is more fuel efficient than my small little mid-sized SUV downstairs.
Sherbet. Wow.
It's an absolutely amazing vehicle. And everybody that I've spoken to and everybody who had a chance to drive the car has had nothing but good things to say about it.
Yeah.
And the fact that Haval has said, we're going to show you how good these cars are.
Now, that's the thing. Rather than just good for a Chinese vehicle, it's a very good vehicle. Full stop.
Yes.
And then you look at the price.
We had instances where wherever we stopped, whether it was in some little backwoods dorpy or in a major city center, people were always asking, what is this? Where does it come from? And my takeaway from it is, if you had to pull the Haval badges off the front,
people think it's a Prado.
People would think it is a European vehicle. It is that good.
For Zona, you drove it. I mean, from a female's point of view, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's a good vehicle. The quality and stuff is good. But for me, driving it was bulky.
It's big.
It's
a heavy car.
You can feel its weight.
Yeah.
My personal favorite was the H60. It was just a good combination between the small H2s and the big H9.
Okay.
But the quality is good. They run really nice. They hold nicely to the road and stuff. So.
So also all good cars.
Mm. Yeah.
Fantastic. So I mean, it looks like. High fives all around for Haval.
Well, look, if I didn't have a dead old Land Rover in the garage already and I was in the market for a big competent SUV, I'd definitely head straight to them. Spend my own money on one.
Come next year when it comes time to trade in the old Tucson.
Yeah. You're going to have a look at this.
I'm definitely going to.
And do you think these cars will they hold their value, do you think?
Possibly not.
Probably not.
It's still a bit of an unknown quantity.
Yeah. And the thing is, I think as soon as they are established, because now GWM's had the same problem. People, it's Chinese.
Yeah.
they've been in the country almost 20 years now. Mm. So,
yeah, exactly.
People, GWMs might not hold their value the way they should.
Yeah,
but they do, and I think Evolve.
No car does.
Yeah, to be honest. Yeah.
I think Evolve will eventually end up there. Once they've convinced the consumers that they're not going anywhere,
yeah,
and that they have a good product,
yeah,
and it's, you know, worthwhile spending your money with them.
Yeah. What a way to go.
So far on the sales side, the most selling model is the H2.
Okay.
And females are the majority of their buyers.
Sure. I mean, I don't know why we're complaining about or thinking that there's risk around Chinese manufacturers when, you know, look at General Motors.
Exactly.
So, you know, you can't compare them like that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, General Motors pulled out of how many countries?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, pretty much everything except China and South America and the US.
Mm. So comparing them in terms of, well, what are they going to do in the future versus another manufacturer in the world, I don't think it's a fair comparison, to be honest.
No, true. So, the fact that there's so much good big brand name technology underneath should actually also
convince me.
That should convince you as well.
Well, listen, I mean, I think there's, you know, the general perception, you know, you do get cheap stuff that's made in China, but they're not, it doesn't mean that they're applying
that stigma.
It is that stigma
that's the problem.
That gets attached to this. But until you've actually experienced it, there's also a hell of a lot of amazing stuff that has come out of China.
Well, I'll say one thing.
Yeah.
I bought my first GWM in 2006.
Okay.
I was a multiple GWM owner at one point. And looking at how far they've come in the last 13 years, or 12, 13 years, it's incredible to believe, it's hard to believe that this Haval comes from essentially the same stable as those first GWM buckets of mine.
Yeah.
It's a completely different class of vehicle.
Sure.
And they're actually progressing far faster than the Japanese did in the 60s and 70s and than the Koreans did in the 80s and 90s.
There is a massive investment in the brand in the country.
Absolutely.
So I would say if you're in market for one of these, definitely.
At least go have a look.
Yeah, consider
go and have a look and take it for a test drive, because that, I think, is the changer.
Yeah.
Is once you've gotten in it and you've experienced it, the quality, you go, okay, well, this, I don't know what everybody was complaining about.
Fantastic, guys. Well, thank you very much for that. And it's, hats off to Haval. And let's see what happens. Moving on to some tech stuff. Yay. The new electric Vespa goes on sale in Europe. Shut up. Listen. None of you ride scooters like I ride scooters, and the fact that
real men ride motorcycles.
No, listen, we can debate this. We'll debate this. We can debate this. But so the Italian motorcycle group Piaggio says that the online booking campaign for the Vespa Electric gets underway. Mobility in general, and electric mobility in particular, will never be the same again. The iconic Vespa has now comes with a battery, which is fantastic. Takes 4 hours to charge.
I love the Vespa. You can say what you like.
No, absolutely.
The Vespa is like...
It's an iconic scooter.
It's like your Land Rover V8.
Yeah, but the Vespa without the isn't the same.
Yeah, but you said that about every car that comes in electric. Thing is, you guys just want to hear that
The only place a Vespa belongs is in Rome.
No. Imagine this. You're in Cape Town.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. There we go.
You're taking it. You can't use your car to Camps Bay because the traffic is so freaking bad. You can't find parking. You find the parking somewhere. You park in it. You notice some dude paid $1 million for that parking bay.
Exactly.
You get your car towed away. Guess how the best way is, or what the best way is to get there?
On a
motorcycle.
Absolutely.
Okay, so now you imagine you climb on this motorcycle, you want to hear the ocean, you've got one of those helmets where your ears are open, I think you might have one of those, where your ears are open, silence, you hear the ocean, you hear the mountain, you hear the wind, why do you want to hear the whole freaking time?
Because it's a Vespa.
No, man.
No, come on.
I'm hands down all for one of these. So, I mean, yeah, maximum recharge in 4 hours, the batteries, you'll do 100 Ks on a full charge, zero CO2 emissions, and an engine power of only 4 kilowatts. But hey,
lovely.
Who cares? You're not riding it for its power. It's because you look good when you ride a scooter. Better than you do on a motorbike. Cool guys ride scooters.
Really?
Just bring it out there. I'm telling you now.
Hashtag Tarrant.
I'm not even going to get into that argument.
Nope. Listen, there's a place for bikes. There absolutely is. But you can't knock the scooter.
No.
You cannot knock a scooter.
There's a place for electric bikes, not scooters.
Ooh. Anyway, we're going to move on. We'll see. So we'll see. They'll probably be out, I think, you know, back end of next year. We might get one or two, but you'll start seeing them flood in here. New Ford and Vodafone tech to warn drivers of approaching emergency vehicles. This is really, really nice. So Ford and Vodafone are testing a system to alert drivers of upcoming incidents and instruct them to clear path for emergency services. I don't know if you guys have seen of late, but whenever there's a ambulance or a police car, guys have forgotten how to move, and you actually can't move into the emergency lane because
ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, yes. You know, because there's guys driving in the yellow lane.
You know, I'm a very, very calm driver in the traffic. I let people go and, you know, do whatever they need to do. It doesn't, you know, it's not going to impact my trip too much.
Yes.
But when I see an emergency vehicle trying to get through the traffic and these flipping jackasses don't get out of the way, I climb the pavements. I'll get out of that thing's way. Yeah. Because what if it's your mother in that
exactly.
ambulance?
Exactly. Exactly. 100%, George. I agree with you totally.
That's one thing I'm passionate about is, like, you know, what if those people are trying to save someone's life?
Yeah. So anyway, so this, I mean, if you've got an infotainment system.
Sorry.
This will be part of it if you... No, it's fine, because I think you are. You spot on,
right.
You're right.
You're right.
But now we've got another step in the process to make, you know, arrogant drivers.
I don't think they're arrogant. I think they're just freaking ignorant.
Yeah, well,
they sit there. What are they doing? Like,
you
texting on their phones.
You see flashing lights in your rearview mirror.
You get out the
you
way.
You move.
Absolutely.
Whether they're blue, red, pink or purple, it doesn't
just
matter.
Move out of the way. Deal with whatever it is. If it's a construction vehicle, yeah, well, you'll swear at him when he goes past you, but...
Yes. You know, but get out the way. So anyway, I see that there is some tech. And, guys, unfortunately, we are out of time again. It's been a fantastic show.
Rant,
No, your rant. It's always good. You got to have a rant every now and then.
It's Monday. Rant away.
Exactly. Guys, until next week, this has been Auto Central. Check out our news and reviews. The articles are on site. The Haval stuff is on site. Check out our news and reviews, autotrader.co.za, and follow us on social media. And until next week, have a good one.
This is CliffCentral.com.